production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Monday edition of The Drive, and we've got a full house here in the control room, and we need it. There is a lot, an awful lot to talk about. It was a busy, busy weekend. It's been a busy day today as far as Auburn news.
Yes,
so,
it has.
We've got a lot to catch you up on and get your thoughts on. Bill, Dan, that was Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. He's here on Mondays with his insight, and of course, his Monday musings, which again, I haven't had a chance to look at.
So. This will be Dan's. This is Dan's day.
Okay. I'm excited.
This one's. I'm a little old for this.
I had to learn some stuff.
This is like.
I definitely.
You're doing like Chapel Roan or something?
No, not that new.
All right, and Drew's at the controls. So let's get it going.
It is Monday.
Doing well. Yep.
It's Drew's.
That's right. Drew was here Friday. That's two in a row. What day is it, Dan?
Cal Ripken here over.
What day is it?
It is Monday.
Okay.
Is it?
We were talking about something before you came in.
Okay.
Special day for some people.
Oh no, absolutely.
Not for me, I don't celebrate.
Oh no, but it is like Bill said.
Tomorrow's a special day for me.
Very very
anniversary tomorrow.
Oh yeah.
Happy anniversary.
Very busy day. In the world of Auburn athletics,
You are not kidding. I mean, I knew we'd come in talking about A-Day and get thoughts on that.
Yes,
and we knew that we'd be recapping the baseball series. We knew on Friday Auburn had lost the first game and really needed to win on Friday. They won Friday and they win Saturday in dramatic fashion.
Yep.
So Auburn wins the series down in Gainesville. They're now tied for fourth in the SEC, and second place is just right there ahead of them as well. So I mean, Auburn playing well baseball, but I think we have to get started with basketball because there is news today. Auburn is +2, -1.
Yes.
Players on the roster today in men's basketball.
Yeah, and we're starting to get a look now at what the roster is going to really look like next year, right? We're starting to see it really form.
We think
it's going to be big.
Yeah, it's going to be so much bigger.
Yes,
I mean we already knew about Narcisse Ngoi. Is that right?
Ngoi. Yeah, I think it's like
Ngoi.
Have we gotten confirmation on the pronunciation of the last name?
No.
I think Ted said it was Ngoi.
Oh, two syllables.
Yeah.
Because I know some people are just enjoying
Ngoi.
I know some people are ignoring the N completely.
A lot of times the N is silent.
I might just call him Narcisse.
Narcisse.
Yeah, I might just call him Narcisse.
I think Narcisse makes sense.
Like a pop star or something.
He's the only Narcisse that Auburn has.
Yeah.
He's the only Narcisse that I know of in college basketball. So,
7-footer there. You got a 7-footer, I guess it was last week, in Bucky Aboye from Santa Clara.
Yeah, and Emeka Opuram apparently is coming back, gives you a third 7-footer.
Right.
And then today – Auburn adds a 6'10".
Yeah, Owen Freeman, 6'10". Creighton started his career at Iowa, was the Big Ten Freshman of the Year, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Had a couple of injuries last year that kind of derailed the junior season at Creighton. But, I think he's a really great pickup, a really competitive kid who, hasn't made a lot of threes in his career so far, but it looked like he was starting to take that step forward year two at Iowa. And, he had that finger injury in his shooting hand and then the knee injury. So that probably set that back a little bit. We'll see. And then Thomas Dowd, just a couple hours ago, maybe from Troy. I think he's a 6'8 forward. I think if you look at his picture, you might not understand that this kid is a double-double machine. He can play above the rim. He's very physical. He is a very competitive kid who gets after it. He is going to be a great addition to this basketball team. In every way you can imagine.
Yeah, so, I mean, Auburn definitely adding size there, 6'8", 6'10", in addition to the 2 7-footers that they'd added. And then almost like just moments after Auburn added Thomas Dowd, Sebastian Williams-Adams, we talked about it last week, that there were some rumblings about him possibly entering the portal, and he did indeed enter the portal today. Tomorrow is the deadline for players to enter the portal. Now, players don't have to make decisions anytime soon, but they have to be in the portal to be eligible to transfer. So Sebastian Williams-Adams, after a really solid freshman year, is entering the portal. And so now Auburn, you know, it's not just like last year, but, I mean, Tahad Pettiford was the only returnee last year.
Yep.
Now you have, among players who played significant minutes, Tahad and
two.
Kevin Overton.
Yeah, it's basically
so
two.
you have twice as much returning.
And Tahad had a larger role as a sophomore than he did as a freshman. But you're right. It's not the – I mean, I think that there's probably a lesson here, especially if the rules don't change in college basketball, about investing in guys that you believe are multi-year sort of projects and the risk.
May not be worth it. Yeah.
And the risk associated with that, because, I mean, you look now, and Auburn brought in three players, more than three that probably fit this description, but three guys that made their way
about the front court guys?
Yeah, well, three guys that were in the rotation all year
that
were playing their first year of college basketball, first year of D1 college basketball, and all three of them, you thought of as well, they're taking their lumps this year, but wait until you see what dividends – this pays in the future. And in the case of Sebastian and Phillip and Elijah Freeman, who we got word over the weekend is going to be a Texas Longhorn.
Yes, it looks like it's paying dividends for them.
It sure looks like. But for Auburn, you wonder, I mean, we speculated before, like, if Auburn had decided to go more senior heavy on last year's team around Tahad, would it have, you know, would you have had to take the same lumps that you took with some underclassmen and some younger players in the fold? Instead, you chose to go young. And while Tahad is back and Simon Walker's back, and it sounds like Emeka's not going into the portal like some of the other guys are, look like they could be in the fold, the three that we just talked about, they're all going to be playing somewhere else next year.
And all three have their best basketball ahead of them.
Yeah, they have high ceilings.
Right, it is disappointing in that regard. But
the fact that they ended up at UCLA and Texas and wherever Sebastian ends up.
Sebastian will wind up at a big-time power.
Well, I'll say this. Since the middle of the season, people have talked about Houston because it's where he's from, and Houston has to replace several front court pieces that went to the NBA draft this year. So that's – I mean, I think that's your clubhouse leader immediately for the services of Sebastian.
The other lesson that can be learned is whatever you think the cap is going to be or whatever you think the cost is going to be for certain players, just go ahead and add a half a million or a million to that, because that's what it's going to be every year until there's some sort of
almost add bargain. Like 50% or something to it.
And don't expect any sort of hometown discount,
right?
Like that's the other thing. So now Auburn, I mean, I think they've made some good moves.
Oh, I think so too.
Buki,
they've got to make some more.
I think Aboye seems to fit a lot of what they're trying to do with the five, and now to add
front court is set. I think
add Freeman and to add Thomas Dowd, who can play the three, but is probably better suited as a four. And saw Stephen and Thomas talking at A Day. As a matter of fact, didn't want to make too big of a deal about it.
He was here on an official visit.
Just underneath the press box, saw them chatting a little bit. Saw a long line of folks waiting to get their picture taken with Stephen as well when he walked around the concourse stuff. That's he was noticeable, and folks were excited to meet to get a snap a pic with Stephen. But no, I think Thomas and Freeman both look like really quality additions. Thomas Dowd fits the profile of a guy who played really, really well at the mid-major level and can make the jump.
It makes
sense financially and makes sense for his tape. And he wasn't going to be coming back to the same program at Troy. Scott Cross left for Georgia Tech. A couple of Troy's best players are following Scott Cross to Georgia Tech. Thomas is local, Dothan kid.
Yep.
I know there was a healthy Thomas Dowd section at Trojan Arena this year. I imagine that
bring it to Neville.
Yeah. I mean, when during the season, I had people telling me like, yeah, expect the local schools, the biggest, Georgia, Alabama, Auburn, Florida State, Tennessee, like expect those schools to be in on Thomas if he's in the portal. Sure enough, a lot of those schools sounded like they were contenders, and Auburn makes the right moves to land one of the best mid-major forwards in the portal.
And to your point, I mean, you look at the guys Auburn's brought in. Aboye has 2 years. Narcisse has 2 years, but then Freeman and Dowd, they're seniors. So it's, you know.
Right, unless the rules pass that they're talking about now.
Five for five.
So
yeah,
I don't know if either of those guys have
– No, they have. None of them are redshirted. So, yeah, so they could have an extra. But, right. I mean, you're not going after guys that have 3 years right. of eligibility or, right. you know, or bringing in high schoolers to the rate yeah. that you used to. I don't know that anybody's going to unless you get a guy that may be a one-and-done right. NBA draft
sure
pick,
thing.
A lottery
yep.
pick, and they're still – you're just going to get 1 year out of them,
right.
too.
Right.
So,
it's tough if you're a coach right now to
oh,
make
it is.
Those type of decisions. Right?
Now Auburn needs to go out and add some wings.
Yeah, and I think a wing, a combo guard, mm-hmm. maybe another combo-type guard, we'll see.
Yeah, I think guys that – yeah, backcourt guys, one, two, three,
yeah.
and, you know – two or three of the guys that play combinations of those positions.
Yeah, I think one guy at Auburn is continuing to try to get and try to work out everything you got to work out for an international is Mantas
Rustavicius.
Rustavicius, okay, that's better than that. Better than mine, so I'll go with that. But from Lithuania, I believe, so that's a guy to watch. He's a very good three-point shooter, got some length to him on mm-hmm. the you know outside there, exactly what Auburn needed. They struggled so much defending opponents' three-pointers there, and I think part of that was because they just weren't big enough on the outside, too.
And I think it would have been urgent to go find help at the wing, even if you'd kept Sebastian in the fold, although Sebastian would have probably slotted in as a – like, assuming you make all the same moves and Sebastian is back, he's probably playing a lot of minutes at the three with this group because you've got guys at the four and the five.
As long as that three-point shot develops.
Yeah.
You can't have a non-three-point shooter at the three.
And maybe it helps to have a stretch four and a five who can shoot a little bit too. But you're right. You need Sebastian's offensive game to develop.
I wonder because I'd heard from a couple of folks for a while that Sebastian really, really preferred the four. Mm. He really preferred four. And adding Thomas Dowd,
yeah.
who is more of a four, I could see where – Sway might think that's going to cut into his minutes a lot.
I think especially, if the priority is playing the four, then bolstering the front court in ways that give you more options mm-hmm. at the five and the four would have eaten into some of those minutes. And for Sebastian, it's, he'll decide what's next for him. But for Auburn, even being able to pencil Tahad and Kevin Overton into at least 30 minutes a game each – and assuming that Simon Walker will give you something, although I wonder how much they can
right.
sort of approach the portal with that belief. The big void right now would appear to be like you've got a ton of minutes at the three available.
You really do.
And
absolutely
and no do. One on the team who seems to be an obvious fit to slide in. And I mean, I guess Thomas could.
I would think he could.
In a pinch,
he has not been. You know, I would think you'd want somebody who's a little more of a proven factor shooting the three.
Right. I would. Yeah.
I think Thomas is around
fair.
A 30% three-point shooter.
Yeah. I think that Auburn going and finding, and if that player can eat some minutes up at the two.
Yeah.
As well, because I think you've got, like you said, you've got Tahad and
you can slide Kevin over to the point at times. I mean, you've got a little flexibility there, but I'm thinking 2-3, and then I don't know, maybe if you could find a guy. I don't know where you find a guy that could give you a few more minutes as a possible point.
Yeah, I'm not.
It's a tough sell, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, unless they find like someone who fits that all the criteria they're looking for. Like the thought of going out and selling someone on being Tahad's 10-minute a game backup at the point feels mm-hmm. like it would be a difficult, especially like what kind of player are you going to get to? And I know you'd love to have insurance if something happens to Tahad, but that's not the easy, like you said, that's not the easiest sell. It feels like approaching this like you have 40 minutes at the point between Tahad and Overton and sort of filling out minutes at the two and the three accordingly is probably easier because you can sell more concrete roles to people that way, I would think. As much as you'd like extra help at the point, I just wonder if it's, once you have a locked in starter at a position, it makes it tougher to address that position in any other meaningful way.
Yeah.
All right, we're just underway, and Uncle Ollie, we want to give you plenty of time, so we're going to get to our first break. Then we'll head to the phones. You can join in behind him on the Drive Hotline, 334-321-1390. We're just underway here on the Monday Drive.
This is Coach Stephen. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Should I say that?
No. Welcome back into the Monday Drive. We got a little off topic there during the break, but, I mean, we do a lot of the time. Bill, Dan, Brian here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we're going to head to the Drive Hotline, and Uncle Ollie is up first. What's up, Uncle?
Hey, guys. How are y'all today?
Doing fine.
Good. So before I get into sports, Bill, me and you are close to the same age. So did you enjoy your no, that's a matter of opinion.
I don't think I am. It's just every once in a while I realize my body tells me, yeah, hell yeah, you are.
I totally get that.
You want to talk a little music?
What I wanted to find out, A, was how was your concert?
Little Feet was great on Friday. I mean, they were outstanding. I mean, really
yeah.
good. And then we went up to the old 280 boogie yesterday.
Oh boy, did y'all boogie?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but my question was, since then, have you educated Dan on Little Feet?
Oh,
I mean, he was totally oblivious.
I heard a little of that.
I know Little Feet from just because of the music.
We used to use as clothes.
And I was sure. I was like,
they opened with that.
There's a guy singing the bass notes in that. Right. It used to make me crazy. Yeah. It's not just a bass player. There's a guy doing vocal bass on it. But I don't know very much beyond that.
You know Dixie Chicken.
Yeah. I know more about Bigfoot.
Well, of course. One of the founding members and one of the lead singers was Lowell George, who died of a brain tumor back in, 78,
Yeah,
79.
A long time ago.
But Dixie Chicken, the interesting thing about that song, that is where the Dixie Chicks got their name.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Chicks,
of course, after Woke came around,
right.
they changed it to the Wit. They don't want to be associated with Dixie. But that's where they got their name.
Makes sense.
Yeah, Little Feet was they were quite the band back in the mid 70s, late 70s. As far as the A-Day game, everybody's freaking out. When's the last time an A-Day game really mattered? I remember back in 2010. Cam Newton did not put on a show.
Oh, no. No, he was like 3 of 9.
3 of 8, 16.
Yeah. Although I will say that I had someone point out to me over the weekend that mentioning that it's okay that a quarterback doesn't play well because Cam Newton didn't play well is like Alabama pointing out that Nick Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe. So it's like, it's okay to lose to Louisiana Monroe. It's like, just because it happened that way. I agree with you that people are it's very easy to overblow the results of a spring game. It's very easy to, especially in the case of a player like Byron Brown, who has multiple years as a D1 quarterback with a track record, and is not playing his style right in a spring game. It probably won't mean anything when the season starts.
Right.
I'm sure he would have liked to play better, and I'm sure Alex Golish would have liked for Byron Brown to play better.
Let's look at it half glass full. Maybe our defense is that freaking good.
Mm. They may be.
I mean, Jared Smith was making plays.
Whoa.
That pick
was phenomenal.
Even before the pick, he was getting plays blown dead with his ability to get past the tackle. He was going to war with Joe Simmons all game long. It's unfortunate for Byron, right? That a couple of throws didn't go his way. I'm still really excited about what this offense could do in 2026.
So and when your quarterback can't run, what do your running backs do? I mean, there's no deception. they're running into a defense that knows the quarterback is not going to run.
Right. So it's not a threat because all they have to do is reach out and be near him and
exactly.
They'll whistle.
And it wasn't just the. I mean, look, Byram got real close on a deep shot real early to Chaz Nimrod. Right. They just missed by like a step on one of the first plays of the game. He still made some. I thought the short stuff with the yards after the catch potential was there, and is something that you're going to see a lot of in this offense. Sounds like there's a pretty healthy screen game. And if you've watched Tennessee the last couple of years, mm-hmm. that would make sense to sort of know what you're getting. But the way Golish said Byram performed, what was the way he phrased it? Like
he didn't see the field.
Wasn't seeing the field all that well.
I'm still trying to figure out exactly what that means. I mean, why wasn't he? But
and they'll spend a lot of time in the film room.
Oh yeah,
based on Saturday. And the last thing, Auburn might be the best 10-8 baseball team in the SEC. Mm. Those guys, I'm telling you, when the bats, then they're starting to heat up. I think they're going to be a tough out the longer the season goes.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to get Mason McCrane out of the lineup now. And my goodness, it's like plug him in at leadoff. And he really was impressive.
Auburn is up to number 5 in the RPI, which is a really good sign. Their high RPI last year was the reason they got that national seed.
I was listening to a podcast this weekend. They're talking about Johnson at LSU, losing his mind last week about spent too much money and picked guys in the portal that haven't panned out, and that he needs to concentrate more on homegrown. And in the same podcast, one of our Auburn's lineup, and 7 of their 9 are homegrown. And Bristol Carter has been there what?
I know he transferred,
but he's been there.
Year 2.
Yeah. Yep. So, but that's impressive. 7 of the 9 are homegrown kids.
Yeah, they have signed back-to-back really, really strong classes. They've got
it's
another
like three,
really good class
three
coming in.
Straight, really, really good classes.
Now, they may not get a player or two in that, but if they do, goodness.
They've done a great job of hanging on to guys. And, the quality of ball in the SEC definitely doesn't hurt. You keeping some of these guys.
And being able to pay them now.
The same podcast, and these are not Auburn people, this is the SEC podcast, they say that, in their opinion, Ethan Bingaman is freshman of the year in the SEC.
That's interesting. I have not really followed like other freshmen on the team. I think Bingaman's having a good year. I didn't realize he was having SEC freshman of the year type year, but that's an interesting.
Yeah, he doesn't have eye popping numbers, but he's been around 300 all year long.
And the thing about him, though, I still think he has a step to take this year.
Oh yeah,
you can kind of see
it. I agree.
Because if anybody is hitting the ball hard and not getting as many hits as more so than anybody else on the team, I think it might be Bingaman.
Yeah, I agree. All right, guys. Always glad to talk to you. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, absolutely. Good hearing from you. 334-321-1390.
I've seen Auburn, generally the third or fourth, and usually third SEC team in most of the polls this week. I mean, Texas and Georgia are teams that I think some folks would feel comfortable. Like beyond them, though,
A&M. A&M's 12-5. Texas is 11-6.
A&M's one of the hottest teams.
A&M's won 6 straight.
Yeah.
And then Georgia's, of course, leading the league at 13-5. But Auburn, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, 10-8. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I mean, Auburn's schedule has been really, really tough. And to take 2 out of 3 down in Gainesville, really impressive.
First series that Auburn's won against a ranked SEC opponent on the road where they've lost the Friday night or the game one.
You lose game one, it's just hang on to try to salvage a game.
First one they've won like that since 2021 at Georgia. So that just tells you that's a pretty big accomplishment. And that Georgia team was ranked 20th, and I think Florida was top 10 in most polls. So that was a big, big win for this team. Both Friday and Saturday's games were comeback wins.
Right.
And so that's something this team has not necessarily done a whole lot of this year, a couple times, but But just having those type games where your pitching just sticks in there and keeps you in it, and you fight back and you claw back, and that shows you a lot of mental toughness, a lot of grit. And I think we're seeing that here in the second half of the SEC season for Auburn, which they needed to show.
Yeah, so very impressive there. Fun weekend. I mean, it really was. We'd love your thoughts. If you were at A-Day, are you concerned? I mean, we saw what we saw. You know, Byron Brown couldn't run. He did. He made one really, really bad throw. I mean, it was one really bad throw.
The second pick.
The Jared Smith pick was not just like, oh, what a terrible throw by Byron Brown. It was like, what an unbelievable play by Jared Smith.
Yeah. And Jared said they've been doing it all spring, and he finally got one. So, you know.
Wow.
He's kind of waiting for it.
When a guy's 6'7", as athletic as he is, I mean, he can really make some plays.
I understand why the bulk of the attention is going to Byron, and you know, that's going to be the case, I think, with a lot of Auburn football this year is how he plays is going to decide how we talk about the game. I thought that there were some other players at different positions.
Deshaun Spencer
really made a case that he's going to be on the field a lot this fall. And you know, you wait for the dust to settle over the next couple of months, but he's got it, right? Like whatever that thing is beyond measuring like a receiver's height and weight and 40 time and ability to catch the ball, like he's got that he gets open kind of magic, right? Like
does.
It was on display over and over again, and it's something that separate, like sometimes two receivers can be physically about the same, right? You know, a lot of the measurables can be even, and one guy can be far more effective than another because he understands those aspects of the game.
Yeah.
Feels like for a freshman, Spencer very advanced at figuring out how to get open, what to do to go catch it, what to do after the catch, which is something that Byron Brown wanted to talk about in the postgame.
I think you have to put him as second string at the slot position right now behind Nimrod.
Right.
And certainly a guy that's going to
play. I think
play.
He's going to play. I think when Auburn, if they want to go four wide with four receivers, I think there's a really good chance he's one of the – you go two slots inside, you go Nimrod and Spencer. Yep. I mean, look, he's a guy that played in a powerhouse program at Saraland. I mean, he's a guy that came in after Ryan Williams graduated. He stepped right in and had like 1,500 yards receiving as a senior. So, I mean, it's like he's made plays. He is a playmaker. He's not the biggest guy. He won't wow you with his size. But you're right, Dan. I mean, he gets open, and then he's quick. He is really, really quick. Sometimes it's not just about how fast your 40 is. It's, you know, can you make moves that other players, that defenders can't mimic without losing a half a step?
Right, and how many guys, Brian, how many guys have we seen come through the program that physically look like the Terminator?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, they look like...
They can't play.
They look like Arnold in 81, and then they can't get open.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like... And so to me, don't dismiss, you know, the possibility, even with a bunch of veteran receivers.
Yeah.
I think they've got someone who looks like he could be on the field very early, and I was just, I mean, we were joking about how every target seemed to go to Spencer
because he was getting open
before he caught four or five more of them. Like it was a highly impressive debut for a freshman receiver that I think a lot of people are excited about.
All right, we are about halfway done with hour number one. We've touched on a little football, basketball, and baseball. We will go more in depth, and we'd love your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports. Come on in and join us, 334-321-1390. We're just a quarter of the way in here on the Monday Drive.
1010AU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive, 23 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from auburnsports.com. Again, anything you want to talk about sports-wise, a busy, busy weekend. All right, let's go back to basketball a little bit again and just sort of take a look at the roster that Auburn has. I guess they could field They could start a five of Tahad, Kevin Overton, Dowd at the three, Freeman at the four, and Aboye slash Narcisse at the five.
They could.
I mean, that wouldn't be crazy. I think they would like a little more shooting prowess from the wing.
If they get, say, Rubes
Devicius, I believe.
They get him and or Aristote from Arizona. Mm-hmm. That's a three who can shoot.
And a three with length that can shoot.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So one of those two would be excellent. If they could somehow get both of them and fit them into this, this would be one of the biggest teams I've ever covered.
You're not kidding.
Yeah. You know? And then, you know, find maybe a combo guard that can play some point. You know, we don't want to rely just on Todd Pettiford as your
point
guard.
Yeah, I mean, if you find a combo guard that you feel confident in his ability to handle the ball and run the point, then, Dan, you might be able to say, all right, there's 20 minutes that you could figure that you might be able to play.
Yeah, I'm curious if they, because I think the last few times they've tried that route, it's been sort of mixed results, right? So, I mean, I think that if they, like, Javon McCormick worked out
swimmingly.
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy where it's like you spend a year learning and then you take over, and you know, it's beneficial for all parties involved. If they can find a guard that fits the bill, like if they can find a point guard who is comfortable with a smaller role this year, maybe with the understanding that he could have a much larger role next year, depending on what happens, like that'd be great.
Because you know, KO, I mean, should be done after this year, unless, as Brian said, you get to the five for five.
If they can find one of those, like I think that'd be outstanding. I just wonder if it's going to be easier to slot Tahad and Kevin into the point guard minutes and try to find minutes at the two and the three to sort of to supplement the roster. I mean, they could. I mean, there's no stopping them from doing both.
No,
right? Like you can find some wings and some shooting guard minutes and also have insurance for Tahad on the team too. I just wonder if they're going to be able to find. I just wonder if the kind of player willing to play a few minutes for Tahad this year and hope for a larger role next year is going to be capable enough to help you right now.
I would think you might have to sort of reach for one of those guys. It might need to be somebody. And Auburn's done a really good job of finding those players that aren't necessarily at the power four, high-profile programs. Find somebody that they feel like, wow, he's got some potential here. We can get him some minutes this year, and then he can be the guy next year, but because it's less likely you're going to pluck somebody from a high profile program, because they're going to expect they're going to go somewhere.
Can you find
and get 30 minutes
backup point guard and or backup shooting guard that can give you better minutes than Magwood and or Mucilec gave you this year? I think that's what the goal would be, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you can find that person.
So how many players does Auburn have on the roster now? We mentioned those six. Yeah, Depourham is seven, and Simon Walker is eight. Is there anybody? Is that it?
Did Bashir leave officially, or is he still here?
He entered the portal.
Okay.
He entered the portal. I think Blake's coming back, so that could get you to nine. You'd have nine, but you've got you have room. I mean, you can have as many as 15 players on scholarship.
Tahad, Kevin.
Mm-hmm. And Mychalek, and Simon Walker.
Yeah, Simon Walker.
So there's four guards.
Blake Mychalek.
Right, four guards. And then
Aporum.
Aporum.
Who's back from last year?
Back from last year.
Five, right?
Okay.
Five back from last year.
And maybe Bashir. No, you said Bashir.
Five back from last year. Oh, you've got a signee.
Caleb Williams.
That's right.
Williams.
So that's six.
Okay.
And then
in the portal, you've gone and got Buki. You've got Thomas Dowd.
And Owen Freeman. And then you signed Narcisse from overseas.
Narcisse.
So you got 10.
You have 10 players.
You could have as many as 10 players right now. So there's plenty of room scholarship-wise. And I think you probably want to – I don't think you have to get to 15. I think if you can get to 12 or 13 with players that you feel like can help you, then you're fine.
You don't want to rely on Caleb Williams. No, not a highly recruited kid coming to high school. He's going to need time to develop, and we'll see. You never know. He may be better than you think, or he may be gone after you. You just don't know anymore.
That's right.
Sebastian is – I think losing Sebastian is disappointing, not just because it was really easy to pencil him in for a lot of minutes on this team that we're talking about, because of his ability to play the two and the three.
It also shifts your classes around. Yeah. I mean, it's putting you in a position where you're going to have to just about be going out and bringing in upperclassmen, one-year guys.
I think you also have to imagine the coaching staff sort of assumed, okay, well Sebastian's going to take on defensive responsibility, and maybe you can prioritize more offense in the portal. Now you got to try to fill Sebastian's minutes too, and that's that's going to be you lost a week, right? Because you thought he was in the fold.
That's right.
And
he waits till the day before the portal closes,
which is his prerogative. Sure. And it's unfortunate.
And he's a high profile enough player, and there's enough video on him and knowledge of him. It's not like he wasn't known coming out of high school, right, that he can go in and there will be plenty of interest.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that there was sort of the head fake at first, right?
Oh, yeah,
saying
he's coming back.
Yeah, if he had merely decided the day before the portal closes to go into the portal, like you have to imagine maybe Auburn would have.
Oh,
been
yeah, I mean, if he had said nothing, and everybody would have been, well, is he coming back or
I
not?
Think,
there
I
probably would have
Auburn
been.
Auburn was still prepared though, because they went ahead and got
Dowd,
both Dowd, and they got Owen too, and both those were announced before it was official with Sebastian.
Right. And the South Alabama kid was in this weekend too. I haven't heard if he's
Adam
Olson.
Yeah, I haven't heard any decision about that from Adam Olson.
I don't know if Auburn can take another forward now that they got those two, but we'll see.
He's a little bit. Olson would be more of a three, I think, than the other two guys. So it would be interesting to know if Auburn would. You went to the trouble of hosting a guy this weekend,
right?
So I wonder if
like we said, I think they had to have to have an idea that it was a possibility that Sebastian wouldn't come back.
You're right; they've lost a forward since they hosted Adam. If he was indeed in the fold this weekend, so yeah, I think it's certainly helpful to have those guards back, because at least you're not frantically trying to fill those minutes as well. You don't have the roster continuity you thought you were going to have. During the season, you're watching Elijah and Phillip and Sebastian and thinking like, oh, well, you're just scratching the surface of what these guys could be at Auburn. Instead, they're gonna scratch that surface somewhere else in college basketball. But I think you've seen some aggressive moves from the coaching staff this weekend to try to fill the roster.
Yeah, Adam Olson was a 40% three-point shooter this year.
And he's 6'8", and he was just a freshman last year, right? No, he was a junior.
He was a junior.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's a guy that can shoot it. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, there's another guy. If you add him again.
Another size.
What a huge lineup. Now, the only thing you'd worry about now would be how well do these guys defend against, you know, 6'4", 6'5", wings as opposed to the guys their size.
The good thing is they can afford to be more aggressive because you have a bunch of 7-foot, 6'10ers behind them.
That's true.
As rim protectors.
That's
so
true.
That helps out those perimeter guys a lot too.
I think Adam Olson would fit a lot of what you're talking about the roster needing right now.
I agree.
So, I mean, maybe he's 6'7", 6'8", but he's also like 200 pounds, right? I mean, he's a three. I think
he's a long wing.
Yeah. A guy whose 3-point shot got better. He's played some international ball
he's from
Canada, and so he's somebody who could be a pretty potent if Auburn can lock him down. And I know the last I heard, Auburn was the last place he visited.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you wonder if that news comes through, those are more minutes off the board, presumably for next year's Auburn team.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised. We said the other day that over the weekend by Monday that there'd probably be some more news, and my goodness, there has been plenty of basketball news. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join us. Your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final few minutes of hour number one. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews. All right, we were talking a little bit. We'll get into baseball a little bit more in hour number two.
Yes.
We're talking about some of the guys that stood out on A-Day. I thought the offensive line played pretty well. Again, Alex Golish said the defense was vanilla.
Right.
So I think that's something to keep in mind. I think he wanted the offense to be able to make some plays there for the fans.
Yeah, and I think the offense was kind of vanilla too, in my opinion. But I did think they ran the ball pretty good, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I thought, the guys you would think.
Jeremiah looked good. Yep. Omar Mapson looks pretty good.
He looks like he could end up at some point being your number two running back, possibly. I would not rule that out. I just think he has a lot of talent, and I think he's really, really tough, mm-hmm. and he has that knack of getting that extra yard or two after contact or more. I just like his style.
Yeah, I really thought that Jeremiah looked like he's taken a step forward physically even from the end of last season. You know, that burst that's always been there, that mm-hmm. home run threat felt even more potent. They didn't give him the ball that many times because I think they know what they have in Jeremiah Cobb. He still showed you the big play threat on one of those runs.
Yep.
It was pretty close to being a full breakout. He's dangerous. And then beyond Jeremiah, who I know is going to play a lot, I don't want to shortchange any of the other guys. Omar Mapson has clearly impressed the coaches a ton. Alex Golish, you can tell, trusts Davenport, mm-hmm. having seen him last year at South Florida and knowing that he is maybe a different style of runner, a little stronger, a little more of a bruiser than some of the other guys that they've got in that running back room. Washington, I think
Washington was banged up, right?
They're pushing. Yeah, so Washington is still
seen the best of him yet.
Washington's still dealing with the injuries that ended his season at Baylor last year, and I think there's the hope that he can get past it. But he's only been full speed for a week, I think is what Golish said in the post game. I mean, beyond Jeremiah, it's a talented room, but things feel pretty unsettled as mm-hmm. far as who plays when and. Who doesn't play at all. And I think between Meadows and Davenport and Washington and Omar Mapson, you've got a lot of running backs that could find their way into the mix.
Yeah, I think Meadows is going to have a spot on this team, something important to do on third down just because he's so quick and fast and can catch the ball. And I think he's a pretty decent pass blocker, although I suspect Cobb and maybe Mapson are your two best ones on the team right now. But I was impressed with that group. I don't think there's a superstar in that group, but I think there's a lot of good football players in that group, which is what you need to bring
up. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, Cobb's as proven as anyone as far as, especially on the offense, returning from last year's team. Now, it's a limited group, but, yeah, I think that's a position group that I feel like they've done retaining Jeremiah was huge. I think if you hadn't retained Jeremiah Cobb, you'd be talking about where all these new pieces sort of fit into the Auburn offense
and fit in the SEC, right?
Yeah, and how they fit in the SEC. Do you have a number one? I don't think you're having those kind of questions because you retained Jeremiah Cobb, and it also I think speaks to on an offense where pretty much everyone left, the fact that Jeremiah Cobb decided to stick around and keep playing.
He's been one of the most loyal people I've covered in my 25 years. If you think about it, because he originally committed to Gus, right? Is that right? Or was it Harsin?
I think he committed to Gus and played for Harsin, although I could have that.
Maybe I have it backwards.
I think he signed. I think he committed to Gus and signed with Harsin.
Right.
Maybe he committed to Harsin, but
went through the whole Harsin era, stuck with Freeze. Maybe it's been Freeze was here 3 years, right?
Yes.
And Harsin was here one and a half years.
But that math adds up.
No.
He could have committed.
I mean, Jeremiah was. He committed to Harsin.
That's right. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. But still,
Gus had been recruiting him. Yes. I mean, he is
stuck with it and really just done his best for Auburn and doesn't speak out a lot, but just does all the work, anything asked of him, and more on and off the field. Just a great representative of Auburn University.
Mm-hmm. There were some bright spots. I mean, again, it's hard to take a lot from a spring game. The best thing I thought about spring is they came out of it pretty healthy.
Yeah, I mean, major injuries that we know of, right?
No. So they should be good, 100% heading into the start of fall camp. That doesn't guarantee you're going to be fine, by the first football game.
Right. But that's great. But,
yeah, that's absolutely right. I think they got a lot out of this spring. I really do.
I do too.
All right, we're halfway done here on the Monday Drive. Need to get to our top of the hour break. We got Brian's Monday Musings coming up probably around the bottom of the hour, as we normally do. But phone lines are wide open. Love to hear from you. Were you at A-Day? What did you think of Auburn baseball? How are you feeling about the basketball team now with all the movement going on? Anything on your mind? Join us in hour number two of the Monday Drive. All right.
Production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Monday Drive. Didn't even mention this earlier. What a gorgeous day. Yes. I mean, it is beautiful. It was a little cooler yesterday.
Loved it.
Warmed up a little bit today, but still in the 70s. Able to get a bunch of things done outside. You're not kidding. Just go ahead and get the pollen out. There's still a little bit of pollen, but get rid of that. But no, what a beautiful day. And coming off a very enjoyable weekend. I mean, we got a couple of music shows in, but I mean, Auburn baseball, very impressive. A-Day was fun. Good crowd. I'm still not sure it was 34 plus, but whatever.
I'm not either. You know, I'm an FOI that.
So that's okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Christian won the
Christian did win
won the contest.
I'm 0 for 26 or whatever.
I won it twice.
Wow.
But I thought I was closer than he was yesterday.
I was like 1,000 off. So I mean, Christian's guess must have been an excellent one, because I'm pretty sure I was like.
I think he picked 34-2.
Yeah, I think my number
34-1.
I think my number was like 33-5.
You think there were 33-5 there?
No,
I don't either.
Well, no, I added the extra. The rules are what 8 to 10,000 people at A-Day come dressed as empty seats.
Yeah, that's
right. But, so you got to factor that in.
But that's when they sold tickets. I just figured this time I'd go. I usually do overinflate a little bit.
My understanding is
I figured it was closer to 25.
They made Riley go around the stadium and do a head count. Yeah. That's what he was doing on Saturday. So
there were no folks in the upper deck. There weren't very many in the end zones. But hey, it was still a good crowd. Good crowd there for A-Day on what was a really nice day.
It was.
And again, as we said there at the end of the first hour, nobody got hurt.
And you know what? And a lot of we were doing the post game press conference and mm-hmm. scrambling out of the stadium by then. But a lot of folks took advantage of the opportunity to get some pictures and some autographs.
Oh yeah.
And my understanding was Alex Golish.
I heard he stuck around till 6.
Stayed until like long after the time is up and they're supposed to. He didn't want anyone who waited in line to leave that stadium without a chance to get some FaceTime with the new coach.
You know,
that's really cool.
Yeah, I really think,
dig
Brian,
it.
I mean, the man knows what's going to work. He knows, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean it will, but I mean, everything that he has done has been done in a way where Auburn fans are like, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. I mean, you know, we still got to see it work. But, I mean, he's going about things, I think, in the right way to endear himself to Auburn fans. And he said the right things. He's acting the right way, and I like the direction
everything,
that this team's heading.
Everything I've seen and heard has been positive about his work ethic and his vision for the program and how hard he's working. And he just doesn't strike me as a guy that's going to make like a monumental mistake like Harsin did, basically just
putting
not
on
recruiting.
Right.
Or you Freeze did. I'm not trying to beat up these guys, but I mean, Freeze made some bad decisions at quarterback.
Auburn's decisions early on in the portal were like they didn't really pay as much attention to the portal early on when it first opened.
And he just did not, I think, hold this team to a high enough standard on the offensive side of the ball as DJ Durkin did on his side of the ball. It just didn't happen for him, even though he did manage to get some good talented players here. It just could not put it all together on the coaching front there. So I don't think Alex Gulish is going to make any big mistakes. I'm sure there will be something, you know, he'll regret or whatever. But I'm just talking about monumental, you cannot fix this type of mistakes. I just don't see him.
Well, you've already seen him, you know, talk about, I mean, he's serious about what he says. I mean, you do what he expects, or
right,
there's some consequences. And I like that. I mean, I do think there's no question the fact that there's not a spring portal probably made it easier for coaches all across the country to be able to be a little tougher this spring than we've seen over the last few years.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens with the spring portal. If anybody's going to try to test that out, you know, and make a, I guess they call it a ghost move or whatever you call it, where you don't get in a portal, you just leave the school and go somewhere else and see if.
Well, you can do that, but under NCAA rules, you'd have to sit out. I mean, you're welcome to leave and go somewhere else.
Right, and they're coming up with rules where the coaches at those schools would be suspended and some things too, and we'll see how that stands up in court as we go along. But yeah, that's going out on a tangent there. But I do feel like that this team made a lot of progress during spring. Mm-hmm. I feel like Gulish and his staff are really good at what they do. Maybe some of them will have an awakening of sorts. You know, oh, okay, this is the SEC, right? I mean, there's going to be a learning curve, right? It's the first time for a lot of them coaching this conference. But I feel really, really good about him and the staff he brought in.
Yeah, so if you were among the 34,000 or so that were there, you know, whether we saw you or not, we'd love to hear from you. What did you think there on the A-Day game? We talked a good bit in the first hour about the basketball, Auburn basketball, over the last 24 hours, adding two players and seeing Sebastian Williams-Adams enter the portal, but Auburn bringing in Owen Freeman. We didn't really talk much about Owen. Owen, you mentioned it, Brian. I mean, was the freshman of the year of the Big Ten at Iowa, where he averaged nearly 11 points, then up that to nearly 17 points a game as a sophomore. Went into the portal last year, signed with Creighton, had suffered an injury, injured a finger, and then injured his knee in the offseason,
yes,
and was late getting started and really never was completely healthy last year for Creighton. And his numbers, he dropped back to about half of what he averaged as a freshman. But he's a 6'10 forward who has played, I mean, a 6'10 forward who has also played a little five, very efficient around the basket. He shot a few threes, but yeah, not a big three-point shooter, but a really good all-around offense-defensive yes, player there at the four.
I mean, as a true freshman in the Big Ten, averaging 10 points, was that six rebounds, almost seven, and getting almost two blocks a game too, tells you a little bit about his ability there. And he improved on those a lot to his sophomore year. He goes to Creighton. He suffered that hand injury, had to have surgery on his finger or hand there at the end
I believe it's his shooting hand.
Yeah, so that set him back. And then in a pickup game, he hurt his knee, had to have surgery there. So I think last year was a really, really tough year. But if he is fully healthy and ready to go, he can be an impact player for Auburn in the SEC. I mean, he could be one of the best bigs in the conference, potentially.
Well, especially when you've got a seven-footer at the five.
Yes.
And Auburn's most likely going to have a seven-footer at the five. I mean, with the addition of we were calling him Bucky, but it's Buki Oboye.
Okay,
Buki Oboye.
It's going to take me a while. It took me a while to get Filip Jovic, but I got it.
Yep.
But
and we're still not 100% on Narcisse.
Right.
But I mean with
you
those,
you almost got it with Filip.
I think
it's still Jovic.
Jovic.
See, I still. I'm sorry.
Well, you won't have to worry about that much. You won't
have Filip Jovic.
UCLA.
I don't think he's going to hear us out in California.
That's right.
Now Auburn will see Elijah Freeman. Yeah. He is
Texas
bound.
Yeah, I really wanted to see what he would become. Now I just have to watch it somewhere else. But the other thing on Owen Freeman is 0-4 three-pointers as a freshman. He went 5-16, so you could tell he was working on it. And then last year he didn't attempt one, probably because of his hand injury, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
You wonder if that's maybe an element of his game that he can add to and build on over the offseason going into this year, so maybe he can be that stretch four a little bit too for Auburn.
Well, and that's something Stephen Pearl can say. You know, that's in our bag.
Right.
That's something we like a big guy to be able to step out and take that shot.
That would be a great part of his game if he could develop that here over the next 6 to 8 months.
Yeah. So Auburn's going to have a large front line. I mean, there's no question about that with the addition there, Freeman, and then Thomas Dowd. We've been talking about him for a while. Dan's met him and been talking about him for a while. 6'8", double-double machine. Mm-hmm. 17 double-doubles this past year for Troy.
Right. Yeah, just, I mean, a good all-around power forward. I mean, a guy who does a lot of good stuff off ball, you know, whether it's setting screens or getting the rebound. He's also a skilled shooter. And someone who, you know, showcased toughness around the basket for Troy this year. You know, and I think that's a guy who makes it's a logical fit for him to make the jump to the SEC, and really seems like he's got the kind of game that especially with a talented group around him. I think he'll fit right in. Like I think this feels like another. And Auburn has several examples of going into the mid-major ranks and finding the right player. Jani is probably the greatest transfer pickup in, like, the portal era. When you think about how he played, like, he probably had the best career of anyone. I mean, Oscar Tshiebwe was really good. But, like, honestly, like, the best transfer of the last decade is probably Jani Broome. And Auburn's had success with other players too. It's not just Jani, but yeah, I think Thomas Dowd, on top of being a local guy and somebody who performed really well at Troy and comes in with some regional ties. Like I think and Scott Cross asks his players to play a pretty physical, intense brand of defense too. It's a little bit like Kevin Overton coming in from Texas Tech in that regard. It's not a system that eschews defense, you know, and just worries about outscoring teams. So yeah, I think Thomas Dowd seems like
great pickup.
Yeah, for a variety of reasons, on the floor, off the floor, a really nice pickup.
6'8", more athletic than you would think, highly competitive, improved his numbers every single year at Troy, and his 3-point shooting made 65 3-pointers last year. So he can play that stretch four. He can move over to three and play a little bit there. So you got some real versatility now in your roster with Dow being able to play 3-4, Freeman being able to play 4-5, a few 7-footers now that can rotate in there and get fouls and block shots. And if they can just develop that backcourt a little bit more, you feel like this could be a pretty exciting team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question about it.
And
all right,
much more veteran, too, right?
Yes,
you're getting
seniors
and juniors and guys who have played a lot more basketball than you did last year.
All right, let's get to the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390, sponsored by Skybar. And Brett is up first this hour. Hey, Brett.
Hey, guys. On Owen Freeman, what kept his minutes down last year? Was it a meniscus or was it the hand?
Both, yeah. He was coming back from the hand surgery. I think he had that early in the year. It happened at the end of his sophomore year at Iowa, I believe.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, I think he only played in like 19 or 20 games at Iowa before he had that injury.
And then during the offseason, during a pickup game, that's where he had to, he hurt his knee and had to have surgery there. So two separate injuries. I think the hand was a little bit longer to come back from. I think it was a pretty serious injury, and he had to have a pretty complicated surgery.
Yeah, he averaged like 27, 28 minutes a game in his season at Iowa before coming to Creighton. So I'm tempted to think, it's predominantly injuries that are that would hold him back. He was still able to be somewhat productive, although again battling the injuries. You wonder how much that limited him last year at Creighton. But the Iowa numbers, and I know he had an injury. I think he had like a hand or a finger injury there too. But the Iowa numbers make you think this is a guy who could really step in and help you out. And what happened last year at Creighton kind of star-crossed.
Yeah, actually his production last year, per minute wasn't bad, whether it be scoring, rebounding, or block shots. But I guess my question, I assume, obviously, they think he's healed or –
I'm sure he's been checked physically by every program that he was involved with here in this portal time.
And he was, I mean, there were several other Power Conference schools looking at Freeman as an addition to I'm guessing that when you play the way he did at Iowa and in limited minutes at Creighton, even with some concern about injury, you're still one of the more proven guys on the board at the four or the five in the college basketball transfer portal.
Yeah. Well, on Dowd, I read where he was hoping to play small forward.
Dowd's open to playing some three. I think that the thought of at 6'8", 200, whatever he is, like, I think the thought of trying to bang as a four all season long is a big ask. And he's got the offensive game to play the three. I know he played some three for Troy. It's kind of positionless with Scott Cross. You got posts and guards, and that's about it. But he moved all around the front court for the Trojans.
Yeah, Brad, I think you'd like to add a more proven shooter there on the wing if you could. Not that Thomas couldn't play and might not play a lot of three.
That's what my last thing. But I assumed that they were going to get another small forward because really they've got three guys who can play center, and actually two. I think Bucky, whatever his name is. I believe he's agile enough to play the four, at least on the defensive end. So, but they certainly, along with another guard, they need another small forward.
Oh, I agree. I think they need a couple of guys in the backcourt. They need a combo guard and then maybe a 2-3 if they can find a couple of those guys.
Well, don't they have a few guys that they're left looking at that are combo guards? It seemed like a guy out in it was either San Diego State or Santa Clara or somewhere out there. It seemed like they had one guy they were looking at.
I think there was talk about Colby Garland is the San Jose State guard, but I think that was before. Yeah. But that was before Tahad came back, and I wonder if that was more on the off chance Auburn needed a starting point guard.
Well, all right, guys, y'all have a good evening.
Appreciate it, Brett. Yeah, like we were saying a little earlier, it's tough to just find to be able to absolutely show the number of minutes that some of these guys are hoping to find.
You're talking about, you don't need to exclusively recruit out of the Sun Belt. Although I do think if you got your pick of Sun Belt players every year, you'd probably have a pretty good team every year. But like for Thomas Dow, Thomas Dow was first team all conference and the tournament MVP. Auburn's still in the mix for Adam Olson, who was second team all conference, I think, and was South Florida was a, I mean, South Alabama was, I mean, was a team that really leaned on him a lot for its outside shooting. So
yeah, I don't think he played against Auburn.
No, or... I think he went in the portal before the tournament. I could have that wrong, but
yeah. So I mean, he's a guy that you didn't get to see them when Auburn had them in the NIT.
Yeah, his last game at South Florida was the Sun Belt tournament game.
Okay,
that's the one I went to that game. Georgia Southern hit 23 threes.
Whoa,
that was part because Georgia Southern made the Cinderella run. They started on Wednesday and won every day in Pensacola until losing to Troy in the finals on Monday. Like they did the Mortal Kombat bracket, and Friday night they played South Alabama, and South Alabama made the trip from Mobile to Pensacola. They got there, they played their game,
turned around and went back.
They were home before midnight in Mobile that night, and Adam Olson. That was his final appearance with the Jags.
Yeah, so I mean, we've talked. I mean, Olson, Aristode, Roops DeVicious are three guys that
keep an eye on.
Could be threes.
And I do think they're going to try to find a combo guard. I don't know who that is yet.
Yeah, that may be somebody we haven't heard of to this point. I mean, again, just trying to find someone who's okay coming in and not seeing 25 minutes available.
Right. And, one thing with the way this is going right now, with all the money that's being thrown out to sign the top-tier transfers, that means those teams are going to have a lot less money in the second tier, which there are going to be plenty of good players still available. You're going to be able to find some bargains. And that's what Auburn needs to do maybe once they fill that important wing spot, is find a bargain there at that combo guard that can come in and be – a backup point guard, a backup two, and give you 20 minutes a game.
Right, and we don't, you know, we have no idea of, you know, what Auburn, you know, where Auburn is budget-wise.
Right.
We've heard some numbers of what they may have available for this year, but you don't know, you know, how much of that is already gone, how much did it take to retain Tahad and KO, and then how much were they thinking they would, you know, go on Sebastian and Elijah and Phillip.
Right.
So,
well, I think a lot of teams thought that $12 million would be the baseline, and I think that baseline got quickly moved up. And I think it's at least $15 million if you want to be a competitive team. So, that's where Auburn needs to be, and I think that's where they will be.
Well, so that means you can have 15 players on scholarship, $15 million. So you can do an average, sort of like our draft did. It doesn't mean everybody's going to be there at that average. There aren't going to be many of those guys that will be super bargain buys.
I'm okay with paying five of those guys nothing if I'm building a roster in college basketball. And then
that's why I was saying, you know, you don't. I don't see any reason why you have to have more than like 12 guys on scholarship. Look, the roster size was 13,
right?
And you still weren't playing but eight guys for the most part in the past. If you can find eight or nine guys who you feel like these guys can play and they can help my team right now, and then a couple of others just in case because you're going to have some injuries, things like that, you don't have to have a 15-man roster, at least as far as scholarships.
Now, I think you're pretty close to the identity of this year's team. I mean, I think you look now, and I mean, especially with
Find me another shooter.
That's the thing. And you look at Adam Olson's numbers in South Alabama. Yeah. Like he would fit the bill. I mean, he's got I think four different conference games this year.
Aristo's a pretty good shooter too.
Aristo's a good shooter. But like Adam had four different.
Rupsevicius is a good shooter.
Yes,
that's four. How they get you.com. Welcome back into the drive. 26 minutes after 5 o'clock. Yeah, and it's about that time where we get Brian to let us know what he had in his musings, which he does every week there at auburnsports.com. He has Auburn athletics thoughts, and then gets into some musical musings.
And today I wrote about the thing we haven't talked about much or at all today, the North Jordan-Hare North project.
Yeah,
oh yeah, yeah.
Which I think is fantastic. I mean, just from the looks of it.
It does. It looks amazing.
I just I tip my hat to the people in charge of that. I think they've done a fantastic job, and I wrote a little bit about that and how. Symbols are important to programs and to schools, and just like Samford Hall is a symbol of Auburn University, Jordan-Hare is a symbol of the Auburn football program, and it needs to look like that. So I think this is a good step in the right direction.
A little different from the South.
Yes. Yes. Well, I talked a little bit about that. I made a joke in there about
oh,
that.
Yeah?
Too.
Okay. Oh, yeah? Okay. It's hard not to think about that.
Yeah. And then,
although I appreciated Chick-fil-A on Saturday.
Yes, thank you so much. Yes, and I talked a little bit about the A-Day game, and I talked about, and we talked about this too, the grit that the Auburn baseball team showed Florida, and just the way they're starting to play ball now. It just looks like a team that's really competing and really just getting after it. And the way they were able to come back on the road against a quality team, that was an impressive weekend.
I mean, this is still a young team. But it is a very talented team, and I like the way that they've been able to handle things. We'll talk a little more about Auburn baseball in the final half hour.
And so musical journey. I think this is more in Dan's wheelhouse. But if Bill can do this, it'll just raise.
I mean, I don't have high expectations.
I'm already so
exciting.
Yeah, but we are going back 32 years. So, but
all right.
I mean, 32 years have flown by in my mind.
Yeah, to 94.
1994. All okay. Right. This is the release of a debut album from an East Coast hip-hop artist that became one of the greatest albums of all time. Debut album.
East Coast?
East Coast.
Okay. Well, let me see here. 94 doesn't feel like it would be B.I.G.
Nope.
Nas? Is it Illmatic?
Hello.
Okay, yeah. All right, cool.
Nailed it.
We need the sound effects.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
I was thinking, it would be like, because Wu-Tang's like 93, East Coast, first half of the 90s, like East Coast hip-hop groups or acts that you could say that about would be like probably just the Wu-Tang Clan, Notorious B.I.G., and Nas would be like the three, you know, especially to put out an album that highly regarded. Jay-Z came a little bit later.
Yep.
But I would say, Illmatic by Nas would be, you know, the no guest appearances, just real hip-hop.
And yeah, exactly. And ranked 44th by Rolling Stone on the greatest albums of all time. So that's how much it's respected in that community. I didn't know a lot about it because, you know, I'm stuck in the 70s and 80s.
It's good. Music. Yeah, Nas is good.
And born in Brooklyn, was raised in a housing project in Queens, dropped out of school eighth grade, but was just a musical, I guess, I don't know if genius is the right word or not, but just writing lyrics and doing things like that from a very, very young age. Got his start, I think, in 91 when he was a guest lyric on Main Sources Live at the Barbecue and just took off from there. Mm. So, and that, I think he was 16 when he did that. Mm. Very, very talented. And of course, still going, you know, 3 decades later, still going strong there. I think he's put out close to 20 albums now.
And, he's someone who doesn't really feel like, because I think for a long time, pop music and especially hip hop was sort of seen as like, well, you do it when you're young and then you go away. And I think Nas is sort of pioneering that whole like, no, you can still practice your artistry like later in life in this genre and a lot of other ones. And now he's rapping about having daughters and mortgages and right, things. But right. You know, it's a little bit different than like the subject matter on Illmatic. But
the people that have grown up with him are feeling those same things, right? So
I think that's a cool thing too. That like you don't have to, especially if you still have the drive and the talent, like the thought that you don't have to be put out to pasture just because. Yeah. Because it's not cutting edge anymore. Like there are a lot of 90s, 80s and 90s hip hop artists still touring and still recording music, and you know some of them are you know better than ever before.
Yep.
Great, cool stuff from Brian. I mean, again, you never know what direction Brian's going. I mean, you've gone. We've gone back hundreds of years to classical. To rock, to hip hop, to
country. We had
country.
A haunted house
it's
one
like,
time.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Look forward to that every week. And again, that's something we count on. It's great having Brian here on Mondays when you do that.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll talk a little more Auburn baseball in the final half hour, but we'd love for you to join in. We'll go whatever direction you'd like here on the Monday Drive.
Call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Monday. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from auburnsports.com. And, we'll talk some more baseball. I mean, Mason McCrane, SEC Freshman of the Week again. After being inserted into the leadoff spot, all he does is hit three homers.
Never would have guessed that was the way direction Auburn would go, putting Mason leadoff.
Well, Thursday, Chris Rimbert was put in there, and Mason was in the lineup. But move him to leadoff, and it's been a great move here in the first couple of ball games.
Hit two big home runs on Thursday night, right, to help come back and win that game.
No, it's Friday.
And then Saturday,
first game at leadoff.
Saturday hit a big one there in that I guess it was a 5-run inning maybe when they came back.
Yeah, I mean that one didn't look good early on. I mean, As you said earlier, I mean the bats are starting to come around, the young guys. We've talked about this. I mean, to see how Ethan Bingham and Mason McCrane as true freshmen, Brandon McCrane has had a really really good redshirt freshman year. Both in the field and at the plate.
He's getting better too in the field. You can see he's getting more comfortable there at shortstop. I thought one of the best stories from this weekend was Bub Terrell. You know, had a bad game Thursday.
Yeah, he struck out 4 times.
Yep. Got taken out of the game about midway through. Butch said he talked to Bub, and Bub told him that, you know, I'm mentally ready to go, and I'll do whatever, you know, it takes. I want this team to win. I'll do whatever it takes. So they put him back in there. He batted ninth, and he hit that big, big home run. I guess it was Friday to tie it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, was it – I'm trying to remember – they tied it, and then did Mason hit the home run to give them the win? I can't remember exactly how they scored those last couple of runs, but his tied it there. That was a big, big hit for Auburn and for him too. Just he's had sort of up and down season, you know, maybe not striking out too much. Feel like he's better in the second half of the lineup than putting him third or fourth, you know, where you know, the strikeouts can really hurt you when you got guys on base. But it was good to see him have that success after what happened on Thursday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question about it. I mean, being, you know, when you lose that first ball game and then you come back and then, yeah, the five runs, Auburn, and you turned out needing those five runs,
yes,
because
did.
Sear, you know, yeah, I mean, hits
another guy.
No doubter, man. What a great series he had.
How many guys have had those series against Auburn? You know, Arkansas, the kid for Arkansas had a great series against Auburn. Helfrich, was it?
Yeah.
And then
Helfrich,
the kid from Texas, Aiden Robbins, I believe it was, went off. So, yeah, they need to start walking guys a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, but, I mean, to be able to come back and get the eight, and then, you know, Petrovic was really, really good on Saturday.
He was.
And then Ryan Hetzler was able to get the win when Auburn came back. He did give up the two-run shot there to Sear, but yeah, then able to close Shut it down after that. Got the first two outs there in the ninth, and then a base runner in Sear makes it a three-run game. But
and he's hitting 96, 97.
Yeah,
on the gun now. Just,
yeah, 97 seems fairly common for him now.
That's wild. I just wonder if he can find a way to get a little bit of more movement on his fastball, what kind of a pitcher he could become in the future. To me, I thought he was a breaking ball guy, and then he comes back this year.
Yeah,
and
I thought he was a low to, you know, I thought 94 was about his, it seemed like his max at last year.
So I'm excited to see how he continues to develop there. But this team seems to be coming together now. And, you know, Mason McCrane was out of the lineup for about, I guess, 2 weeks or so. And he's worked on it, and he's come back and been outstanding. And, you know, Auburn needs those big bats up and down the lineup, right? Because you never know who's going to get hot at the right time.
I'm still and I'm feeling that you know, it's coming. Eddie Madrigal's gonna get hot too. I mean, he's a guy that's just been in the lineup for a couple of weeks now.
I keep waiting for it till you feel like he's gonna start barreling him up and start sending him out of the park. Gregorio was getting there, and then he had that setback. He'll be out a couple of weeks, I think. But yeah, you just feel like this team is starting to feel it a little bit now.
I was worried when Chase you know, had to leave.
Right.
And
he got beat
up
a little bit.
Yeah. And he was able to DH on Saturday. Didn't get a hit, but, I mean, back in the lineup at DH. So, and then, yeah, you look at the bottom of the lineup there on Saturday. You've got Brandon McCrane, who's hitting nearly 360, and then Bub were there. I mean, you've got threats up and down the lineup.
Yep.
And, again, the pitching –
been good all year.
Dre Alvarez, that was his first big bump this year. But then you're able to have Jackson Sanders be able to come in and keep things close. And I mean, they've got such a good situation there in pitching. And now I can't wait tomorrow night. They're
playing Sanford. Yeah, Sanford at the Hoover Met.
And Griffin Graves. I mean, I want to see
chance.
Gonna see him, more of him, because I mean, just an opportunity to add to the depth there of the pitching staff.
When you look at the staff now, how many teams do you think, once we get to postseason, if you get into a fourth game in a regional or whatever, can bring out a guy like Jackson Sanders to start?
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, how many teams have the depth in the bullpen that Auburn has developed, you know, especially with the Griffin Graves coming back now once he gets sharp now? Not many. So that's going to keep Auburn in every single game they play, I feel like, for most of the season and into the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you get into the postseason, I mean, you never want to be in the loser's bracket, because, boy, that's when you've got to have those extra arms, and Auburn's got those. So, I mean, if that does happen – They've got the guys
SEC
give that
tournament.
SEC tournament is when you need it. You need to be more in the SEC tournament, it feels like, than you do in a regional or for sure a super regional.
And while I don't know exactly how realistic the, like, winning a share of the regular season title is right now, I mean, they would probably need, like, they're a couple games back.
Well, they finished with Georgia. They probably have to win the series, maybe even sweep to get them back. We'll see what happens. You never know.
But beyond that, I mean, especially since so many of the conversations we've had about Auburn baseball the last couple of years have been about trying to play your way off the bubble, trying to play your way into secure NCAA tournament position. It's like, I mean, you're already – like, I mean, it would take an implosion for this team to miss the NCAA tournament, right? Like,
absolutely.
I mean, for what they've done in conference right now, like, to not get to 14 SEC wins would be – fairly catastrophic. Now you're talking about, I think the next step would be, if you're not on the bubble, you're talking about hosting, You're talking about where are you with regards to the top 8 and the top 16? Yeah.
This team with their national top 5 RPI is talking about we need to be a national seed, a top 8 national seed, and host a super regional if you get to that. That should be their goal.
I think they've got the horses to do it. I think the top 3, top 4 teams in the SEC probably should be thinking of themselves as super regional hosts and certainly regional hosts. And I mean, it's just been like playoff baseball at Auburn has been – it's been electric when they've been able to bring the regionals and super regionals to Plainsman Park, and this year would be no exception. You know, if they can make that happen.
Yeah, and they are only 3 games behind Georgia, so that's good. The only problem with Georgia is now they do go to Ole Miss this weekend. Ole Miss, along with Texas A&M and Auburn, are 3 of the hottest teams in the league right now in Georgia. So that's going to be an interesting series. And then they do get Missouri at home. You figure that's going to be a sweep. Then they get LSU at home. That's probably a sweep, too, the way LSU is playing right now, one of the worst teams in the SEC, which is really surprising. And then they go to Auburn. So really Auburn would have to close in on them and then hold with the Ole Miss, them going to Ole Miss this weekend and Auburn hosting Oklahoma, I believe. And then maybe just hang in there and get to that final weekend and see if they could do something there.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great. I mean,
it would be tough.
But I mean, the main thing is, look, Auburn won that series on the road. They've got 4 series left, 2 of them at home. So you feel like Auburn's in very good position to finish above 500 in SEC play. You do that, then you are a lock. Mm-hmm. You're a lock to be hosting a regional and should be. One of the top 8 national seeds.
Oh, I would be surprised if a team, leave Auburn aside for a second. I think if an SEC team got to 16 regular season wins, which is what you're talking about being above 500 league, you get to 16, I would be stunned if you're not a top 8 national seed.
Auburn was 17-13 last year. What seed, do you remember what seed they were? Were they top five, weren't they?
Because Coastal was like the best 2 seed on the board. Wasn't Auburn like closer to like 8 or 9?
Yeah, I think they were 7 or 8.
Yeah, I thought Auburn was like,
Because Coastal was a high 2 seed
back and look.
Last year. Hey, you know, another guy that sort of out of nowhere, I mean, it was in the loss, but what about the job Abe Chancellor did?
Yes.
On Thursday.
Another left-hander.
One-hit ball.
Auburn was the number 4 national seed last year. Auburn was 4. Coastal was 13.
Coastal should have been higher.
Yes.
They should have been a higher 2 seed. That's what it was.
But Abe Chancellor, another guy, that bullpen, a lefty who is really coming on. You feel like he could be one of those situational guys if you need him in the middle of a game. And
I mean, you've already got Lance Cormier and Jet Johnson from the right side as you know, guys that can get you to the end.
Yeah, and maybe the other team has a couple lefties coming up.
And Garrett Brewer's another one. Yeah. I mean,
And he, after going through a little bit of a spell there, he has come back and he's worked with Coach Teef on some things, and he looked much sharper the last couple of times I think he's been out there. So, yeah, it's really coming together, and this is with Drew Whalen, one of their top believers, potential starter.
Yeah, he was a guy that you figured was your 4th starter right at the beginning of the season.
Yep. And Griffin Graves just, you know, making his 3rd appearance, I guess, tomorrow, too. So this pitching staff has been strong all season, has the potential to be stronger now.
Yeah, so it's fun thinking about and watching Auburn baseball now back at home with Oklahoma coming in this weekend before they hit the road for a couple of weeks. All right, we'll go ahead and get to our final break of the afternoon. Back to sort of wrap things up. Still plenty of time for you to join us if you'd like. 334-321-1390 as we wind things down here on the Monday edition of The Drive.
Were you shocked last time you bought groceries?
Monday, let's get to The Drive hotline, and Tex is up next. Hey, Tex.
Hey, guys, I know you got to get to Brian's musings, so I'm not going to
Oh, no, we already did that. We already did that. We got a few minutes,
Okay, so my first question, Bill, while I talk about a couple other things, can you tell me how many times under Butch we've hosted regionals? So it may take you a minute to look up. So
I'm thinking it's 3. Is that right? 3 or 4?
I'd have to look it up. It feels like it's more than 3, but I could be wrong. It took them a while to get there.
Right. Yeah. All right. Yeah, we'll find it here.
Well, why are you doing that? So if you pay real close attention, you notice a change in the approach at the plate. And it's really funny that Coach Johnson here from LSU has been saying, we don't have anybody that will hit the ball to the opposite fielder up the middle. If you look at the home runs, some of the home runs, some of the extra base hits, they're going opposite field. Our hitters, especially our younger hitters, have matured significantly as the season have gone along.
Oh, yes.
And the McCrane son, I just how did anybody in the Phoenix City area, Glenwood or Smith Station, how'd they ever lose a baseball game with the two McCrane brothers on the team? I just don't get that. they are phenomenal
athletes.
They
really are.
Yeah, who play really good baseball. So, and it's good to see Bub go yard yesterday, too. And, you know, our pitching staff, even though we can get down, you never feel like you're out of the game because we don't get down 8 or 10 to nothing, 3 or 4. And that just doesn't seem like a big number to this offense now.
It's just three regionals so far.
I thought, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Okay. All right. So how many did we go to previous to that?
The last time Auburn hosted regionals before 22, which I believe was the first time they hosted under Butch, last time it was 2010.
Yeah.
So Auburn went a
dozen years.
That was Hunter Morris and that team, that really good team.
Yep. I wish he was related, but he's not.
So, claim him anyway.
Really, really, really good left-handed hitter.
Yeah.
My grandson, who's now 6, is hitting left-handed, Bill, and he said something. Papa, do you have any video? I said, no, but go look up Hunter Morris. He goes, is that your brother? Yeah, we're going with yes. Go. If that's the way you're going to swing the bat, go look
at
that.
If he can swing the bat like Hunter, that'd be fine.
Yes, absolutely. So, also, it's the resilience of this team, even if we make an error or even late in the game when it feels like maybe the other team's starting to get a little momentum, it seems to go away because our staff has been remarkable to me.
They have.
They miss, but gosh, everybody misses. But I also think some of the guns in the league are not necessarily correct.
A little hotter, maybe.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I don't know how many 97s Florida can run out, and it just doesn't seem right to me.
Well, and I mean, Hetzler was hitting 2 or 3 miles an hour hotter.
Yeah.
Saturday than he has any other gun.
So maybe that 97 was 95.
Okay.
Exactly, and hey, by the way, that's people may not think this. But that's a huge difference.
It is. It really is.
Yeah, it is a huge difference. And when the ball gets on top of you. I'm just really proud of this group because there's something about them when you're around them and you watch them and the way they carry themselves. They're not cocky, but they're not backing down from anybody. And that gets you a long way deep into games when you have to battle. And, you know, the Florida announcers, we happened to be driving, and I was listening to SEC Network where I could get the Florida guys, and they were just whining and crying about umpires and how they can't hit late in the game and everything else. And I'm just sitting there going, oh, my gosh, this is Florida. You know, that's so unusual for them. But they also mentioned that the resilience of the Auburn team, who struggled a little bit with the bat on Sunday, but then all of a sudden exploded. Plus, when you put pressure on people, they make dumb errors, really dumb errors.
Mm-hmm.
A pitcher throws strikes, can't even hit a big 6'4" guy at first base. So that's just – anyway, that's enough about that. I'm sorry I missed A-Day. My daughter was there with her husband and the kids. It looked like it was a really good time for them. I didn't get to see it. And A-Day to me is like watching flag football if you're worried about the quarterback. It really doesn't matter.
Yep.
He doesn't get to be able to use his full scope of his talent. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Good hearing from you, Tex. Well, with that, we are out of time. Fun show today. Great stuff, Brian. There's plenty to talk about, plenty going on, and plenty for folks to be keeping up with there at auburnsports.com.
Basketball portal. Coaches will be going on the road soon. Recruits will be coming in for official visits next month. Baseball, everything you could want to know about Auburn Sports, auburnsports.com. Check us out. Follow me on Twitter, /X @BMattAU.
That's going to do it for the Monday drive. Hopefully we'll get a chance to check in with the voice of the Tigers tomorrow, Andy Burcham, as Auburn up in Birmingham, getting ready to take on Samford at the Hoover Met. Hopefully we will have him, and love for you to join us as well. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.